Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The place where you are the most fulfilled in your life is at the intersection of four questions. What do I love? What am I good at? What can I get paid for? And what does the world need? And if you don't find the intersection to all four of those, which is a really hard thing to find, but if you don't find the intersection to all four of those, if you settle for two or three of them, you'll end up kind of being unsatisfied.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello, welcome along to the show. It's Justin here with something a bit different for you today. In place of our usual classic replay midweek show, we're talking about how a top surgeon found his life's purpose on a hospital ship, as I'm joined by special guest Mark Schreim. This week, across the Premier Network, we're focusing on the incredible work of Mercy Ships and inviting you to make a difference. I'll tell you how you can do that later in the show. Today, we'll hear Mark's story of a search for fulfillment that led to a career in surgery, eventually aboard Mercy Ships. Mark is a lecturer in global health and medicine at Harvard Medical School and also a 3-time competitor in American Ninja Warrior, believe it or not. He's also the author of Solving for Why, A Surgeon's Journey to Discover the Transformative Power of Purpose. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a bit about your backstory. How did life begin for you, and where did sort of medicine and surgery come in?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I'll start with the fact that my family is an immigrant family. I was born to Lebanese parents in Lebanon. Spent my first couple of years in Lebanon, and then a civil war in the 1970s caused my family to flee. And they ended up in the U.S. And I say that because as I grew up, as an immigrant child, a firstborn son of an immigrant family, choosing a career, as many immigrant children will know, we really only have three options: doctor, lawyer, or failure. I pursued medicine to a large degree. I pursued medicine out of that sort of filial duty, that sort of filial obligation. It's at least for me, it was not the right reason to pursue medicine, because I ended up training, 15 years of post-secondary education and training in a specialty or in a field that I really just did not want to be in. I just found myself kind of hating my life all the time, tried to quit medicine countless times, persisted in this path, partly out of that sense of filial duty and partly because I'm not an incredibly brave person. So to strike out off of that path, it was too scary. It was an unknown and it was too scary. Whereas medicine is a sort of well circumscribed path, at least in the US. So fast forward, 15 years after I graduated from secondary school, I had finished almost all of my training. I'd finished my medical school, my residency, a clinical fellowship, and then I took a year off. Spent 6 months of that year just traveling, doing what people do in years off. And then I spent 6 months of that year working, this is in 2008, working in Liberia with Mercy Ships. The word life-changing is overused, but it was genuinely changed the course of my life, because what happened on that ship was the first day I walked down into the hospital wards, I saw a bunch of patients with the sorts of tumors that I had been training to take out. And it hit me that, oh my gosh, this is what I've been training to do for 15 years, and I didn't even know it. So I came back from the ship, went back, did one last clinical fellowship, kept going back to the ship as I established a, you know, usual doctor practice in the US. But after a couple of years of doing that, really realized that being a, you know, full-time clinician in the US was really still not what I wanted to do. That hadn't changed, but now instead of knowing just what I didn't want to do, I knew what I did want to do. So a couple of years into it, scaled back my practice and eventually gave up my practice in the US to focus completely on this work of increasing access to surgery in resource constrained settings.
Well, we'll find out more about the kinds of work that's involved as you've been there for several years and doing what you do there. Where did faith kind of come into this for you, Mark, along the way?
Yeah. You know, when Jesus is asked by John the Baptist's disciples, John the Baptist has been taken prisoner by Herod, and he sends his disciples to Jesus basically to be like, dude, like, I'm in prison now. Are you the Messiah or not? This is obviously the paraphrased version. Jesus responds to John's disciples by saying, go back to John and tell him what you see. The blind see, the deaf hear, the lame leap, and the gospel is preached to the poor. Four things that he said, three of which were health related. And that's really that sort of that marrying of, you know, what did Jesus spend a good portion of his time doing? He spent a good portion of his time healing people, you know, fixing health problems. So really this career path has really been a way to live out, you know, following that model in my own life, using the skills that I happened to basically kind of stumble into, even though I didn't want to.
Yeah. Amazing. Where did American Ninja Warrior come in? Because that's a fairly unusual, you know, part of the CV.
As with all good decisions, the decision to do Ninja Warrior was made after midnight, when all the best decisions are made. I was up late. I was watching YouTube videos of Ninja Warrior. I had been a rock climber for about 6 years at that point, and I really, really enjoyed rock climbing. So I've been watching these YouTube videos of Ninja Warrior, and, you know, with the clarity that only 2 a.m. can bring you, I was like, I'm going to do this. I applied. I like sent in a video, filled in the application. And the next thing I knew, I got a call from Ninja Warrior saying, we want you to film in 3 weeks.
Wow.
I had never tried. I had not trained for it at all. Mm. I kept climbing. So with 3 weeks to go, I was like, ooh, I need to find a ninja gym. So I found a training gym in the Boston area to train at, and that's how an addiction was born.
For those who aren't familiar with it, because I'm not sure how many people get it over here in the UK, it's basically a kind of like really physically demanding sort of game show in many ways, isn't it?
Exactly. It's it's a very large obstacle course that you have to run.
Yeah. I've definitely watched it on YouTube as well. Anyway,
and you didn't sign up.
No, funnily enough, it didn't.
It's a shame.
It just wasn't my life purpose. What can
That's
I say?
Fair. That's fair.
Speaking of which, I mean, life purpose is kind of at the core of this book you've written, Solving for Why. Talk about sort of the way in which the direction your life's gone and the experiences you've had, kind of what that's taught you about what it means to follow your purpose. Because I think a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, have kind of asked themselves, look, what am I here for ultimately?
Right.
Haven't they?
Right. Yes. No. And I don't know if it was the case in the UK. I suspect it was, but in the US, we talked a lot about the great resignation. The pandemic pushed people to re-examine what they were doing. And the response of a lot of people was to realize, ooh, this is not what I want to be spending my time doing. And they resigned their positions. What really hasn't been talked about as much is kind of the great rehire. Where did all those resigning people land? And, you know, there's this concept that I talk about in my book, but that I definitely didn't make up, that, but there's this concept that the place for you to be, right, the place where you are the most fulfilled in your life is at the intersection of four questions. What do I love? What am I good at? What can I get paid for? And what does the world need? And if you don't find the intersection to all four of those, which is a really hard thing to find, but if you don't find the intersection to all four of those, if you settle for two or three of them, you'll end up kind of being unsatisfied. So in my life, before I, you know, as I was trying to pursue medicine without this understanding of why I was pursuing medicine, you know, I could get paid for it. The world needs more doctors, maybe not, you know, big cities in the US, but the world needs more doctors. I could get paid for it. And I was fairly decent at it, but I didn't love it. And those, you know, just the three that it did fulfill without the fourth one really meant that I wasn't living my own why.
Yeah. And in many ways, that's the challenge for everyone, I suppose, because it can be very difficult to see all four of those align in one's life. I mean, tell us a little bit about why the fourth piece fell into place when you did step on board that mercy ship, and what's different about the kind of ministry in a way that you undertake there, the kind of surgery you undertake there, compared to what you had been doing, and I'm sure as a very successful surgeon in the US up to that point.
I love this question, because the fact of the matter is, when I'm a surgeon on the ship, to a large degree, medically, my life is not any different than my medical life was in the US. I'm doing the same types of surgeries, same procedures, the same tumors. They're bigger, but it's the same stuff that I learned to do in the US. The stuff that I learned to do in the US that was, you know, driving me to an early grave is exactly the same stuff that right now gives me life. And that's because it's, you know, it's not the routine. It's not the things that we're doing that give us life or don't. It's the why. It's why we're doing them. And for me, the, you know, if you go back, let's go back to a lot of what Jesus did, in his 3 years of ministry. You know, I talked about the fact that a lot of what he did was to, you know, restore health. But if you think about who he did the things to a large degree, who the people that he concentrated his beneficial actions towards were those that society had marginalized, those that they had cast aside. And often, you know, at the counter, the he reserved his fiercest anger against those who were in religious or political power instead. And so that sort of writing of injustice, that writing of inequity, is really what has been driving me in my own life. And it happens in my own life to sort of play out through the surgical means, but that's just the tool to achieve that why.
Tell us a bit about Mercy Ships itself. What are the vessels that are used? Where do you find them? Who are the people that they're serving? I know you're about to embark on another trip yourself very shortly, aren't you?
Yes, I am. So Mercy Ships, as your listeners will probably know, is an organization that's been around for almost 45 years now, and delivering, as you can kind of guess by the name, delivering healthcare from the decks of hospital ships. We are a surgical organization. So the type of healthcare we deliver is specifically surgical. There is one ship currently in action right now, and there's a second ship that's getting prepared to go into service next year in 2023. So we'll have a two-ship fleet starting next year. And we have focused since 1992 or so, we have focused exclusively in Africa, and primarily in West Africa, with some exceptions. We've been down to Central Africa, down to Madagascar as well. And primarily we've been, you know, we kind of go up and down the coast of West Africa. Each ship as a rule, spends 1 to 2 years at a time docked in a country. But we have an engagement with that country in terms of training, in terms of assessment, evaluation, and governmental work for 5 years with each country.
And how many people might you treat in the course of a year through the ship?
Yeah, it depends on what our surgical schedule looks like. But in general, we do between 1,500 and 2,000 surgeries for that year.
Mm. And it's worth remembering that these are people who are incredibly obviously underserved in terms of, I mean, when we get a tumor removed, it's usually at the point where we've just noticed it. The reason, I guess, people are coming with huge tumors, the kinds that you operate on, is because they don't have that option. So how given the vast need that exists, how do you, as it were, choose, or how does that selection process happen for those who do come aboard?
That's a great question. Before I answer that, I love what you just said right there, because it's often, you can look at the pictures that Mercy Ships will put out, that you'll see these big tumors, and there's it's almost the sense of, oh, that must be something that happens, you know, over there in Africa. The fact of the matter is, underneath the skin, the pathology of the tumors that I take out is exactly the same as the pathology of the tumors that I was taking out in the US. It literally is what you just said. Like, if I notice a bump on my jaw, I will be in the doctor's chair within a week or two. There is no access to that in many of the countries in which we work. Or if there is access, it's too far away or too expensive, or, you know, all the other barriers that patients face. How do we select? We have an entire team whose only job is to do and to optimize patient selection. We provide a specific type of surgeries. So already that narrows down the focus of the patients that we can treat on the ship. And to a large degree, we really try to focus on patients who would have less access, again, because of maybe where they live, how far away they are from the big surgical hospitals in the countries. Selection is done in a multi-stage process in which the patients present. They are reviewed a couple of times for, you know, does what they're presenting with fit the things that we are able to treat? And they finally are brought to the ship to be seen by the surgeons, at which point, you know, 9 times out of 10, if they've made it to that part of the selection process, we're able to treat them. And so we schedule them.
I mean, I know that in your academic life, quite apart from, you know, the on-site surgical work you do, you've been looking at the issues of equity, of how you deliver healthcare, you know, to parts of the world where there is such, you know, a massive inequity going on. And some might say, you know, even the extremely good work that Mercy Ships does is still a drop in the ocean, as it were. How do we see Mercy Ships happen, not just through Mercy Ships, but what's, you know, in a nutshell, how would you like to see this kind of work mirrored elsewhere? What can we do to kind of, you know, ensure that people are treated at the point of need rather than, you know, in those extremities and so on?
You know, the adage that you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. It's a false dichotomy. You can teach someone to fish at the same time that you're also giving them food to eat. So this dichotomy between, in the development world, what's referred to as relief versus development, just dealing with the patients who currently have the tumors versus helping develop the infrastructure so that those tumors never get that big. It's often been viewed with that same dichotomy. We should definitely be focusing on the development, and the relief will take care of itself. Mercy Ships is doing both. And I think that's sort of where things need to go. The long-term sustainable solution is to come alongside and accompany healthcare systems in whatever way those healthcare systems would like us to accompany them, to help develop to the places where those tumors and those bowed legs, et cetera, are no longer waiting 30 years for treatment. In the interim, you've got those patients who need the treatment at the time. They can't wait the 10 years for that to happen. So I really feel like that balance, that middle path between what's been proposed as dichotomous things is the way we move forward.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you're doing this, you know, propelled by your Christian faith. That is obviously the ethos that drives Mercy Ships as well. This is what Jesus came to do, heal the sick. There are, of course, skeptics, and there's a number of skeptics who listen to this show, actually, people who are interested, but, you know, skeptical of the claims of Christianity, who might turn around and say, but why do we even live in such a world? Mark, you see all this suffering and the inequality up close and personal. How do you remain a Christian, a man of faith, doing that work when you see the kind of world we live in and the kind of cancers it produces and the fact that some people have access and others don't? What kind of a God would allow this kind of world?
You know what? There are many times that I thank God that he didn't make me a theologian, because I don't have to answer that question. You know, and the whole question of the existence of a good God and the presence of evil in the world, you know, it's a great question for, you know, late night chats after dinner to, you know, bandy about. In the end, this is the way I push it. In the end, on some level, I don't care. On some level, the inequity exists. On some level, we've been called to right these wrongs. So let's get at it. I mean, that's kind of how I view it. My work in this area is driven and is an outflow of my understanding of, you know, the Gospels, my understanding of what Jesus did, and my desire to kind of live in that model. It's not necessary for one to want to, you know, follow Jesus to work to right inequities. You know, that's still there. So I think they're great questions, but, you know, God made me a surgeon, and surgeons, we're motor neurons. We just know how to cut things.
I'm glad because we need surgeons just as much as we need the theologians. That's for sure. And when you're on the board the ship, what role does your Christian faith play in kind of, you know, when you're approaching day-to-day stuff, how does that work across the team? And when it comes to relating to the people you are ministering to?
Yeah. So you ask, there's 400-ish crew on the ship right now, and you ask each member of them, you'll get 400 different answers. Sure. And that's actually one thing I really do like about Mercy Ships, is that, yes, it's a faith-based organization. Not all of the 400 people are Christian at all. So it's not a requirement to work on the ship to be a Christian. And everyone sort of plays out their faith in different ways. We are currently docked in a country that is 96% Muslim. So were we to take a really hard line on, you know, some of these things, and the line that, some members of the Christian faith would like us to take.
So I guess some people would like you to be, you know, wielding a scalpel in one hand and a Bible in the other, but that's not necessarily the way it works in the way you deliver.
It's not necessarily the way. No. Again, I go back to the what I said at the beginning of the show. Three out of the four things that Jesus talked about were all healthcare. When he tells the parable of the sheep and the goats, what's he talking about there? He's talking about giving food to the hungry. He's talking about clothing the naked and visiting the. So he's talking about dealing and working towards righting the immediate things that are in front of us. We spend a lot of time arguing about theology, and it's fascinating questions, but in the end, he didn't call us to argue about theology. He called us to do those things, and that's how I intend to do them.
What are some of your most memorable patients, stories that you've seen where, you know, you've been able to be part of a transformation of someone's life?
The story that I always go to with this, this would have happened in 2013. We were in Congo, in the Republic of the Congo, so the smaller Congo in Africa. There was a little boy who had some difficulty breathing. Parents took him initially to sort of local physicians, and they told them that he had malaria. They gave him some malaria medicines. That didn't work. They then took him to Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where they looked in his mouth. They saw a big tumor that was growing on the roof of his mouth. But unfortunately, for reasons that I don't know, the family didn't get surgery there. Whether it was too expensive, whether the surgeons didn't offer it, I don't know what happened there. But they didn't get surgery there. He was brought home back to his city to be not to be too unsubtle about it, basically to let the tumor grow, and that would have eventually suffocated him. Mm. His dad worked in the port, and they heard that a hospital ship was coming to the port. So to hear the dad tell the story, he went and bought a calendar and like circled the day that the ship was supposed to arrive and basically counted off the days until the ship got there. The ship got there. They brought Emmanuel to our screening. He was in distress. He was breathing really heavily. The other patients that were waiting for screening basically saw that this little 3-year-old was in distress, so kind of passed him over their heads to the front of the line. We saw him, we were able to bring him on board. It was a hour and a half surgery, really. It was a very simple surgery, and yeah, he recovered. And I have a picture that I keep that has he's holding a sign that says, "Hi, Dr. Mark, I'm all better."
Wow. Yeah. And has his life back, has a future, exactly, and a hope.
Exactly.
It's incredible. And while I'm sure you see lots of stories that are hopeful like that, I can imagine that it's also some really, really tough stuff where it doesn't go the way you hope and so on. I'm sure you value people's prayers and support in for you and the team in all that you're doing. And of course, we're partnering with you because we want to encourage people to support you financially as well. This is incredibly important work, and it is making such a difference to the lives of so many. So thank you very much for being my guest on the show today and giving us a little insight into life on board Mercy Ships and your own journey along the way, Mark. Thanks for being with me today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for being with me today for this special edition of Unbelievable. We've links to Mark Schreim and Mercy Ships with the show info today. And this week across the Premier Network, we're focusing on the incredible work of Mercy Ships, inviting you to make a difference. You can help change your life through Mercy Ships by providing free surgery to those who urgently need it and by transforming local healthcare for the long term. You want to bring about change? Well, do it by going to mercyships.org.uk/Premier. That's mercyships.org.uk/premier. See you next time.